All right, it is time for our NHL insider, Chris Johnson, who joins us from Carolina. Before we get to the hockey stuff, and we got lots of time to set up game four tonight, which could be the last of the season for the Carolina Hurricanes. How much PGA championship did you get under your belt today, sir?
Not as much as I would have liked. I was up early watching Tiger before this gate today, but you know, it looks like Koepka, if only that guy could care about more than four tournaments a year, he would be some kind of golfer. But I'm always in Tiger's corner, and I'm hoping for a better round two for him tomorrow.
Where did you end up going? I know you were strategizing with me over the Twitters on how to compile, a five-man team for this event, but you can't use the guys for the next major kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. It's a majors pool where you pick five for each one and with no duplicates. So at your urging, and I feel good for that, I did pick Cap, Dustin Johnson. I went with Sergio, didn't have a good day. Mm. Bubba Watson is a long shot pick, and who's my fifth? I can't remember. But
I said
anyway,
Fleetwood. I hope you went Fleetwood.
So make that, I'll be good.
Did you roll Fleetwood or no?
I went Fleetwood, yes.
Yes. He's in the third. Not bad. And sorry on the Sergio. Yeah. I mean, I don't love him, but he's three top tens in three appearances. Maybe there's something left there still. Hopefully.
Exactly. And I'm in second after the Masters, so I'm still in the mix here.
Okay, that's good. Let's move along. What's the vibe in Carolina? Are we expecting the funeral slash wake tonight?
Well, you know, that's what my head's telling me. But, you know, it's amazing how this can go in the playoffs sometimes. You know, I've covered a few series over the years where I thought the team had absolutely no chance. And, you know, they might not come back and win the series, but they might win a couple games. And I think the fact that this game is in Raleigh and that the Hurricanes played pretty well for the most part in Game 3, you know, close loss, 2-1 game. I wouldn't be surprised to see them extend the series. But, you know, at this point, Boston's really rolling. Winning six straight games in the playoffs at any stage is tough to do. And, you know, they don't have many holes, and they have a lot of experience. And you know, I just feel as though, you know, it's probably going to be way too much for Carolina to even start dreaming about coming back in the series. But I'm sure the Bruins wouldn't mind getting it done tonight after playing 13 games in their first two rounds and, you know, buying themselves a little bit of a break before the cup final.
Yeah, no, it's been incredibly impressive. The depth players, the fourth liners, the whole decor is getting goal scoring. I really didn't see this coming. This is not the most star-studded roster with the Bruins. We all know they're big guys, but it's some of the guys you hardly know that have been the difference makers.
Well, the big guys, honestly, I mean, they've had a few games where they were, you know, throwing up 4 points or whatever for Marchand, but you know, for the most part, they haven't really carried the load the way I expected they would. I mean, they were kind of viewed a little bit as a one-line team. You know, I think that was maybe a little bit unfair, but, you know, they just got so much of their offense throughout this year and the last couple seasons from the Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand line. But the playoffs has been a totally different story, and I think that's what's, you know, probably put them in the position to win six straight games. The fact they're getting great goaltending and they're winning the specialty teams battle doesn't hurt as well. And, you know, to me, it's just the sort of mix you see that happens for teams that go on to win the cup often or have a long run, is that everything just sort of clicks in place and you're getting some unsung heroes. There's the Sean Corrales of the world. Marcus Johansson's had a pretty good series here against Carolina. You know, some of the guys down the lineup that don't get a lot of attention are helping them get through these wins. And you know, I do think it's only a matter of time before we see another couple of big games from their big players, which is pretty scary for anyone who has to play them.
That is the most horrifying part. If you're Carolina, it's like their best players still haven't taken over a game yet. Okay, well, what are we expecting? I would think they go back to McElhaney, but I saw that Rod Brind'Amour basically said probably, but wouldn't confirm it.
Yeah, you know, I take that as he's going back to him. I mean, for whatever reason, Rod doesn't like getting into the who he's starting a net game, but, you know, everything about his demeanor and the way he answered the question to me, just much the way I felt that the changes coming before Game 3. You know, I don't think he saw anything in that game that gave him too much concern about his goaltender. You know, if anything, it was a couple of bad bounces that ended up behind McElhaney. And you know, given what you've seen from him the last, say, 2 weeks of the playoffs, he's clearly been their best option. So, you know, I think that they'll go with him. And, you know, there's not really a lot of lineup changes for him. It's more trying to break through with Tuukka Rask. And you know, goaltenders in a playoff series can get in a team's head. I think that, you know, you're getting potentially to that position here with Rask and the Hurricanes. You know, they threw 20 shots at him in the first period of the last game. They were all over them. And, you know, it'd be so huge for Carolina just to get the first goal. You know, you have to start any long journey with a few small steps. And, you know, they've just trailed for almost the entire series, which I think takes sort of a mental toll on them. So, you know, if they can find a way to beat Rask early, it becomes a much more interesting game and scenario for them. But, you know, it's you feel the heaviness here in Carolina. I mean, it's been such a good season. So much has gone right for them. And you know, I think that they're a little stunned to find themselves in this position. You know, it happens quickly in the playoffs. If you don't have your best game, all of a sudden you're in this huge hole and you know, wondering kind of what went wrong.
Yeah. Well, and one of the areas that hasn't gone right is the power play. What is the conversation around that? Just huge frustration. It's baffling to watch how good they were in the period one and how many chances they had. It was almost like the power play sat momentum from rather than give them any. And they had what, a bit of 5-on-3 time in there as well.
Yeah. And a 4-on-3, which can be dangerous just with the amount of ice to work the puck around. And, you know, I actually think that's become a mental challenge for them as well. I mean, Rod Brind'Amour said that he feels it's in his guys' heads. And you know, I think that it only stands to reason if you're not getting much done. I mean, it's not even just not scoring, but if you're not creating chances and you know, really putting the other team on its heels when you have those kind of man advantage situations, it does have a negative effect, you know, moving forward. And, you know, Carolina had 4 power plays in the first period of game 3. You might watch a lot of playoff games before you see that again for any one team. They were in a tremendous position to take a lead and you know, put some pressure on the Bruins, and they weren't able to do it. I think ultimately it might end the season. You know, they weren't great at it in the regular season. They only scored 1 power goal during their 4-game sweep over the Islanders. And you know, it's interesting the way this series started. They scored 1 in game 1 against Boston. Took to about 10 seconds after the penalty was called to score 1, and they haven't scored since in a man advantage situation. So, you know, I think that has been a low-key difference maker, especially, you know, when you see a 2-1 game. I mean, every goal obviously carries a lot of weight, and you know, Carolina's just sort of seen the offense run dry here.
What are they going to do next year in net? Do you get the sense that either McElhaney or Mrazek has A, shown them enough to be back, and B, that the team would go and extend or offer contract to either before exploring July 1? It's a weird summer for goalies in the sense that sure, Bobrovsky's a free agent, but it feels like he has his mind made up. We don't know where he's going.
Right. And you know, it's kind of a strange situation. You know, I know McElhaney in particular would have interest in coming back. He's an older guy. It's been a good fit. You know, he's got a family and those type of considerations. But, you know, I don't believe there was any degree of conversation about an extension to this point in time. And, you know, the funny thing is, if you play this late in the year, there's actually not a lot of time for those sort of decisions to be made, just because I'm sure you think it's going to be the off season, but the off season might not be starting until late May or even later. Somehow they offer an unlikely comeback here. But, you know, I do think that they're going to probably keep one of those guys. And McElhaney might be the easier, just because I don't see him having, you know, as good as he's been, I don't see him having a tremendous free agent market out there. I mean, he's going to be 36 years old. You know, I think most teams are comfortable having him as their number two, but in, you know, he's shown in a more platoon type situation that, you know, he can handle 30 starts and put up some good numbers for you. But, you know, Mrazek to me is a bit more of a wild card. He took a little less money to come here on the 1-year deal, sort of bet on himself. And you know, he had a pretty darn good year too, even though, you know, he's been a little tougher since he got injured here in the playoffs. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at least dip his toe in the water of free agency, you know, once the season winds down.
Yeah, see, I could see them bringing back McElhaney as the backup, but it would be completely backwards to go get your backup before your starter, wouldn't it? And depending on who your starter is, wouldn't that dictate the type of, you know, number two you want there with him?
Well, yes and no. You know, I think that enough teams now are comfortable. I mean, first of all, you're probably not at this stage because I don't expect you're getting Bobrovsky, so I doubt they're going to have a number one that we all go, well, that's a guy who's got to play 60 games.
Right.
And so I think it's going to be patched together by committee, honestly. And, you know, maybe there's a scenario where both these guys are back. You know, I don't know that they'd be that uncomfortable with it. You know, one thing that Carolina has done pretty well, I think, is their defense is good. And so, you know, they've gotten beat up a little bit in the series, but throughout the season, you know, I think that they showed that they can make life a little easier on the goaltenders. And so, you know, they might just end up sticking with the same two guys that they got there right now. But, you know, I would think McElhinney's almost a sure thing. Mrazek may just want to look and see what's out there for him if there's more money to be made somewhere else.
Couple other news items. Esa Lindell gets a contract extension. He would be the highest paid defenseman on the the Hurricanes blue line. That's means A, the Hurricanes got everyone on value deals, and B, that Lindell has got himself some money. They locked him up for 6 years.
Yeah, and I see this as a risky deal. You know, it's not that I don't like the player, but 6 years at just less than $6 million is pretty penny for Esa Lindell. And yet you have to wonder what the fallout could be for Dallas moving forward. You know, they have a fair bit of money tied up in their defenseman. They got Klingberg on a pretty good deal, on his second contract, which helps matters. But, Lindell's someone who played a lot of minutes against top competition this year, isn't a major point producer, but was able to handle those tough minutes. And, they got him locked up. But, I don't see any sort of Texas State discount here or some of the things we've talked about when they've signed larger contracts in the past. I mean, this was he's an emerging player, but I don't know how well this one will age over time.
Interesting. We talked about it earlier today. It's a touch off the board, but it's still, I suppose, topical given that he scored twice last night. Do you have a sense of what free agency holds for Carlson, or if he'll get there? Because it certainly doesn't sound like talks have been active all year between the Sharks and Carlson. We're just hammering out the details. It feels quite the opposite of that.
I still think Erik Karlsson is going to be this year's John Tavares. You know, I think he's setting up camp. And in his case, his agents are based outside Toronto at Newport Sports and taking a few suitors and getting wooed and seeing what's out there. You know, I think that he's going to leverage the market and really make a life decision for himself. I'd be surprised if he's back in San Jose. You know, the caveat I think I mentioned the other night was that, I don't know if this cup somehow has really changed his mind and he's fallen in love with the place, but I think it's been tough on his family being there with his wife being from Ottawa and some things that have gone on with them. And, I just think he's going to take this moment in time where he's going to be a rather large name still in the prime of his career. Yes, with some injury questions, but, when you look at someone who's won a couple Norris trophies and still, I think, should have some good years left, I would think that he'll go through a wooing process. I even know back when the All-Star game was in San Jose this year, he had dinner with Henrik Lundqvist at one point, and Lundqvist was low-key just selling him on the merits of the Rangers at that point. I mean, I think Eric's going to really look around and test the market. It would be a surprise to me if we see him sign an extension before June 23rd when he's able to officially start talking to other teams.
New York's the one that just jumps out at you. They got tons of cap space. They've got no major contracts to get done this offseason. Lundqvist has got 2 years left on his contract, and it's a quicker turnaround when you can bring in a Norris-caliber defenseman. I think there's a lot to like about that setup. Are they sort of your clubhouse leader if some wagering website came to you and said, we need to set odds for a Carlson destination?
Yeah, they would be a favorite along with Tampa. And Tampa requires some serious surgery to the roster. But there's been a long sort of song and dance between the Lightning and Carlson. They tried to trade for him out of Ottawa a couple of years ago. And, he and Victor Hedman are very close. And, that's an organization that I could see being bold. I mean, just for out of the sheer fact that they've been hanging around and not won a cup yet, I could see Julien Brisebois in his second year as a general manager, entering his second year, making a kind of a Kawhi Leonard type of move for their team to shake things up, and it might result in Eric signing there. I also believe he would give them a little bit of a discount for the Florida factor and the fact it's such a nice place to live, and some of the other star players have done the same. So, the Rangers are probably the most likely destination because they'll have money to spend. I think that they're at a point where they've got a ton of draft picks piled up. They've started to go through what looks like a rebuild at the second overall pick in this year's draft. And, the time is probably right to scale up a little bit. And I could just see a fit there for him. But don't rule out the Lightning if they start making some moves to clear cap space.
Man, that's there's a lot there. Walk me through how the Lightning get it done. I mean, obviously, this is very pie in the sky and hypothetical, but would you see them dangling one of their really good players along with, say, like a Callahan contract? Is that sort of how you make the math work? Or would it be, I know Palat and Johnson make significant money but aren't their best players because they're so deep up front? Like, how in the world does a team that's going to have a tough time extending Braden Point add an $11 million defenseman?
Well, I think it's going to be trading off the roster. And they still got guys that the people would like. I mean, first of all, there's two things here. The Lightning are losing three players likely to unrestricted free agency off their blue line. Coburn, Anton Strahlman, and
Dan Girardi.
So they're going to have a hole on their blue line in general that needs to be filled in some way, shape, or form. And I don't believe they have all the players internally to do it for a team, you know, to a degree that a team that's trying to win a Stanley Cup will want to do it for next season. That means, in general, I think they're going to have to trade some of their established forwards. You know, I look at a guy like Alex Killorn as a possibility. You know, obviously, if he could get rid of Callahan's cap number, that would be something they would do. It would involve, you know, having to sweeten that deal in some way. You know, Tyler Johnson has a no-move clause or no-trade clause, one of the two, but he would have to consent to a trade, which I think is difficult. But, you know, he's someone that other teams would still have value for, you know, given what he's paid. And I think he's still in the age where he makes sense. I mean, it would require basically trading a guy that's been a key part of their resurgence since 2013. And it wouldn't be an easy trade, but I think it's a trade that you're making, or multiple trades, to shake things up and to try to do things a little bit differently. And you know, I just think that with a new GM there, you know, even though Julian Breezeblow was an assistant, but a lot of those guys were around, that the conditions are kind of in place to see some trades that would be felt pretty significantly in that dressing room. And so, you know, I think they're going to be active one way or another, getting rid of one or two of the guys I mentioned. And, you know, it may involve also Carlson coming. It's not going to be easy, but I think he'll be willing to work with them just to make that happen and join forces with his good buddy, Victor.
Interesting stuff. Wow. Appreciate the chat. Enjoy game four.
I will. Thanks, Ryan.